Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
All right, it is 7:30 on a Thursday, so delighted as always to be joined in studio by John Giles. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
So it was quite a return for the Premier League. No shortage of goals, no shortage of drama. What stood out?
Well, I suppose I'd say the most significant was the Chelsea-Burnley match. I mean, you would have put on the form from last year, which we had to go on. You'd think Chelsea was going to be an easy home match for Chelsea.
Mm.
And in fact, it was a disaster for them. Apart from the result, two players sent off, very poor display, lack of discipline all round. Certainly not the Chelsea, well-organised Chelsea side that we saw winning the Premiership last year.
Mm. The lack of discipline, is that one of the things that would most concern you looking longer term into the season, that there's not that togetherness that was maybe there at this time 12 months ago?
Well, it's like, I think there's problems in the club. When there is, it manifests itself on the pitch. And that's one of the things that does manifest itself, a lack of discipline. Because I think what happens in the lead up to the start of the Premiership, there's no doubt that Conte was very disappointed the way things happened in the summer. You had the Costa situation, and more importantly, you had the Matic situation, because without any doubt, and he said it publicly, he wasn't in favour of Matic going.
Mm.
Now, when we all know that, the Chelsea players also know it. So I think in most clubs, you have to believe, to do it properly, that the manager is in charge. And I think with that situation with Matic, it proved he wasn't in charge. Now, the players know that. And I know as an ex-player, you have to believe the manager is the boss. He's really in charge of everything. And that's a breakdown. It's a breakdown in morale, I think, among the players. Because the players talk among themselves. And they say, and Matic would be, I think, quite popular with, and Costa.
Mm.
And they're in the dressing room saying, what about Matic gone, and, you know, Costa's not with us anymore. So that all leads to, I think, what can be a lack of discipline on the pitch. Because we didn't see that from Chelsea last year. And Luis was lucky, very lucky not to be sent off.
Mm.
He was his head was totally gone, running at the referee, doing stupid fouls. And he didn't get sent off. So there could have been three sent off altogether. So I think it's not just the problems on the pitch. It's what leads to those particular problems.
On Conte being maybe undermined somewhat by Matic leaving, and maybe he was his own worst enemy with the way it's turning out with Costa, but so many of these players at Chelsea were there 2 years ago when something similar happened with Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
And they know that no matter how big a name manager, no matter how much success he has, they will get rid of him. That there's almost a sense of foreboding amongst the players of, here we go again. It doesn't really matter what we do. We know we'll change manager. There'll be someone else here in 4 or 5 months' time. And that there's nobody really there to drag them together. Particularly maybe with someone like John Terry being gone.
John Terry wouldn't drag them together. Up to a point he would. But the manager drags the whole team together. The manager has to dominate John Terry as well as everybody else. And he didn't take much dominate because he was a good lad and he was an influence in the dressing room. But when you get a situation that, in Mourinho's case, when he went, well, first of all, I think there was a situation there about Pedro. I think Mourinho wanted other players in. Pedro was signed at the last minute, if you can remember, and he was obviously going to Manchester United.
Mm.
That fell down, and Chelsea came in and bought him. Now, if Mourinho had wanted Pedro, he was on the transfer list for 3 months or so, he would have had him at the start of the season. So I think he was given, and he didn't want him. And I think he started off in a bad mood. I think the players would have known what was going on. So Mourinho's behaviour also was very bad in relation to the doctor, which had nothing to do with football, really. But that was one part of the problem there. The other part was with the team and not getting what he wanted in the club, having won the league. Now, the same thing has happened with Conte. He's done a brilliant job last year to win the Premiership the way he did. Absolutely brilliant. Now, most of us would think that Abramovich or the owners would go to him and say, you've done a great job, what do you want now? It didn't happen. Now, the players know that. Right, the Costa situation, you could say, well, he handled it badly, but we don't know all the facts. What he is saying, when Costa kicked up just after Christmas, many of you were going to go to China.
Yeah,
I think Conte did a deal with him. You play till the end of the season and you can go, right? And I think at that time, in Conte's head, when you get to the end of the season, and you do, or get us to the end of the season, you're going to go anyway, because I'm going to get rid of you. And what Conte said was, between the agent and Conte, Costa, it was made clear to them that regardless of what happened at the end of the season, he was going to go.
Mm.
Now, that mightn't have been the best way to do it, and maybe sending him the text would have been the wrong way of doing it. So he's put himself in the wrong in many ways. But I think Abramovich didn't like what he did, because Abramovich wants to be in charge. But this all leads to what you see on the pitch, in my opinion. All these disagreements, where they should have been gone into the season. Champions, great. Sign another couple of players that the manager wanted, away we go again. Hasn't happened that way. And I think there's obviously big trouble there.
Yeah. At the same time, they spent, what, 70-something million pounds on Morata, 40 million on Bakayoko, they brought in the defender Rudiger. They have spent money. Maybe it's just to replace players, and there's talk that maybe Van Dijk might come, Danny Drinkwater, they've been linked with.
Can I just interrupt you, Snyder? That's okay, spending money on strengthening the team, right?
Mm.
But it doesn't make sense that when you're strengthening the team, you're selling one of your best players from last season, right? There's no way Conte wanted that. This is the problem. It's not that who they bought. Of course they bought some players and they had to strengthen the squad and they wanted to strengthen the squad. And presumably they were the players that Conte wanted in. But he didn't want Matic to go out. What's the point of signing another player who you're not so sure is going to do it when you have a player that's already done it? That's the problem there. That's what leads to what we got.
Mm.
Of course, I think they had to strengthen the squad anyway. I mean, they did well last year. They went in the Champions League. They didn't have any injuries, any major injuries, so they got away with it. And that's what Conte said himself. Now we need to, now that we're in the Champions League, we're going to be in all the competitions, we need to strengthen, we need to buy three or four players. Well, I think they bought three players and released one.
Mm. And are looking to get rid of Costa.
And
well,
Costa's not going to play for him. He's not playing for them anyway.
Yeah.
So they weren't that well off for players by any means. They need to strengthen. That's what he was saying. So instead of strengthen, right, they're buying players in that might do it, might not do it, and lose a player. That's already done it. But the main problem is the manager is obviously not in charge of the situation. And the players, because of that public, it was so public, we all know he wasn't in charge. The players know he weren't in charge of the situation. Now, morale in any dressing room is very, very fragile. The slightest thing can ruin it. Now, I think what happened to Chelsea weren't the slightest things. They were quite major things that have done it. So again, when you're going on the pitch, you don't know how to, it's very difficult to build morale. And it's very easy to lose it.
Mm.
And looking at the Chelsea players and Conte's demeanour on the touchline, there was obviously something wrong. It's sort of got 3-0 down against Burnley. Players being sent off. Players not behaving themselves. We didn't see this from Chelsea last year at all.
It doesn't feel as though this is an overreaction after just one defeat. There's a lot going on at that club, and that really just reinforced that things weren't right, the manner of the performance against Burnley.
Well, there's one great thing about football. If you have problems in a club, it manifests itself on the pitch.
Mm.
Whatever the problem might be, it manifests itself on the pitch. And that's one great thing about sports generally, but football in particular, that whatever happens on the pitch, it's not like politics or business or anything else where you can hide things and do all sorts of things. On the pitch, it shows. And it's definitely showed. I don't think it's an overreaction from the people watching it, because it was there in front of us, that it was a very, very poor performance, ill-disciplined performance. It was exactly what you didn't want at the start of the season against the Burnley side, who played exceptionally well, particularly in the first half, to do what they did. But they weren't able to, like if you had the Chelsea team from last year, I don't think Burnley would have been able to do that.
Yeah, you were saying there that maybe, say, if even John Terry was still at the club, he mightn't be able to pull them together. If you were in a dressing room and this is happening and you sense, well, we only won the league 3 months ago and now it's all falling apart, can you not get together as a group of senior players?
No, that's what the manager's for, you see. You can try. You can say, well, we can do this. But don't forget, in a dressing room when it's dominated by the manager, all the players don't always get on well together. It's the manager that keeps them together, right? I played in a team, Legion, a great team. I didn't agree with Jack Charlton a lot of the time. Right, and we would be at loggerheads in certain ways. But the manager say, okay, both had your say, this is what we do. And you accept that. So everybody's not pally-wally in a football team by any means. You know what I mean? Like when Brian Clough came in and the team split up. Actually split up. And we were experienced players. So all the teams that you see don't, a lot of teams do get on well together.
Was that in that you all went off into little cliques? And
yeah, it happens. It happens. You know, Brian Clough came in and made a big fuss out of Gordon McQueen and Alan Clark, for example. You know what I mean?
The rest of the You're studied look, looking what's at the two of them going, what's going on here?
What's going on here? You know, we played, we were together as a team all the time under Revy. He wouldn't show any bias to anybody. So when you get, like, John Terry would be a big help in the dressing room, but he was gone as well. But the main thing is the players themselves. And when the players see that the manager's in a weak position, it obviously undermines the manager's situation.
Mm. You sense that Jose Mourinho just couldn't believe his luck that he was able to bring Nemanja Matic to Manchester United, and it was some start to the season for them in terms of performance, in terms of getting their togetherness back.
Well, there's only one match, Nathan. You know, I wouldn't put. I mean, I think it's much better than it has been in the last few years, obviously since Ferguson left. But you'd have to say that West Ham were dreadful. Mm. I thought they were absolutely. I think they're in trouble this season. It was better for Manchester United, there's no doubt, which you would expect it to be. But then again, you have to go and what's the opposition doing? Not very much. But it certainly looks better and more promising for Manchester United than it has done for the last, say, 4 years.
Pogba had Matic playing behind him. They'd left Herrera out of the side. Pogba certainly seemed to get on the ball a lot more. Having that steel behind him of Matic and the protection, does that change things for him?
I'll have to interrupt you there, Nathan. I think the holding player in Matic is a myth, a total myth, because I read about it all the time. The holding player allows Pogba and Sokrates to go forward, right? It doesn't allow him to go forward. Where's the ball? You only go forward in relation to where the ball be, and it's good for the team, right? Now, the reason it would be held to Pogba was that Matic is a very good player.
Yeah.
And if you're playing with better players, then you play better yourself. But the idea that you have a holding midfield player and the other two midfield players can get forward. When? And why? In relation to the ball, do you get run forward when you shouldn't be getting run forward? Mm. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, what midfield players, they balance up together. Pogba shouldn't be running forward when he's not supposed to be running forward. He should be in the middle of the field, right? But Matic would make most other midfield players a better player. But Pogba should be able to know himself when to run forward, when not to run forward. So it's a myth in football, and I hear it all the time. It's become a cliche. The holding player allows the other midfield players to get forward. Doesn't happen. Well, it happens, but not in the way that, he's going to stop everything when it comes. Matic was on the ball more than anybody else. That was his main thing in the game. It wasn't actually defensive that he was doing. He won his fair share of the ball as well. But it was actually using the ball was his main attribute in the game, which obviously is a help to Pogba because you're going to put him in good position. But the idea that he could sit there and the ball's over the other side and Pogba could get in the box when he shouldn't be getting in the box. In other words, allows him to get forward. It's a myth. Now I'm going on a bit about it, but it annoys me sometimes when I hear it.
Were there any signs then that Pogba is improving in terms of his understanding of where he needs to be and what his relationship needs to be with the other central midfielder?
Well, we'll have to wait and see. He hasn't shown that so far. I mean, he's 24 now, and people have that when they're 15, 16, actually. What helps Pogba is the likes of Matic playing, who can control the ball in the middle of the field and control the middle of the field. You've got to give him a role where he doesn't have any responsibility, Pogba. Now, when he played in the middle of the field last year a couple of times, he's no sense of responsibility. Mm. He does get forward when he shouldn't be getting forward. He's out on the left wing when he should be in the middle of the field. All that. I don't think he's any positional sense, Pogba. He has ability. He can do certain things and do them well at times. But keep responsibility away from him. And that's where Matic was a help. Not because it allowed him to get forward. It took the responsibility away from him and gave him a reasonably free role in the middle. Because in the midfield, the central midfield players are the one that control the game. Pogba can't play in central midfield. He can play on the left and he can play on the right and do his stuff from there. But when you got a better player in the side, which Matic has been the best midfield player they've had for a couple of seasons, then it's got to improve everybody, including Pogba.
Yeah. Romelu Lukaku got a couple of goals on his debut. There were question marks over his work rate at times at Everton, that maybe he didn't contribute enough there. He didn't get involved in the game at times. Something that Mourinho generally would have been seen not to stand for. From what you saw of him last week, was it a slightly different Lukaku to what he did at Everton?
You see, like, if you look at him at Everton last year, we're judging from Everton, I think he scored 25, 26 goals. Which you couldn't say he was a great leader of the attack. But if he's going to get 25 goals for you, then, if he could do all of that, then they would have paid 190 million for him. Of course, he has his limitations, but he'll score goals, I think. There's some days you'll watch him, and that fellow was not worth 2 pence.
Yeah.
But there's other days he'll score a hat-trick. That was his form at Everton. He scored some great goals at Everton. But there were some days he's played up to him and he loses it. I mean, he's not the complete player by any means. But I think he will get the 20-odd goals for Manchester United.
Do you try and change that? Do you try and add another part of his game? Or you just go, if I get 25 goals,
yeah,
I'm happy?
Yeah, well, you wouldn't be happy with it. And you could try and improve him. And there's certain things he could definitely improve on in his all-round game. So he's only 24 now. And I think he has come on well since he went to Everton. He's improved an awful lot. Now, it looks like a lad to me that wants to improve. You know, when I hear him talking, yeah, I haven't learned, I've got this to learn. So he could improve on that. Like, he'll never be a Kenny Dalglish, but he can be better than he is and still score the goals. It won't take away from his goal scoring. But there are times you'll watch him play and say, God, that fella's not worth doubling, you know?
Yeah.
But I think he'll get his 20-odd goals for Manchester United.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Get your texts in to John 53106. We'll be back in a moment.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
All right, welcome back. John Giles is with us in studio. We were just going through what we'll chat about between now and 8 o'clock and talking about Liverpool. We're going to chat about them in a minute. We were just mentioning Spurs there. They're in our live game against Chelsea this weekend. They haven't brought anybody in. They're still looking around, and Daniel Levy likes to leave things right till the very end. Just wondering, when you're in a squad over the course of a summer, do you like to see some sort of turnover? I know they did an excellent season for the last couple of years, a very tight, solid squad, but just as a player, do you want to see, all right, there's one or two guys coming in that are going to make some sort of difference?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at the really successful team over the years, Manchester United and Liverpool, for example, Liverpool at their best with Gleeson and Souness and Hansen, these guys, nearly always bought two top-class players at the end of the season.
Mm.
New blood into it. It gives everybody a lift. Manchester United always did it under Ferguson. And when they're winning, you know, they're winning trophies. No. But there's a different situation altogether at Spurs. There's a financial situation. They're going to build a new ground. And they have a policy now with Levi where there's a cap of 100 grand on the players' wages, for example.
Mm.
Arsenal tried that. It didn't work out. You saw Danny Rose objecting to it last week. He said we're underpaid. Anyway, so I think Levi's performed a miracle in getting Harry Kane, you call it a miracle, or taking advantage of, under grand, and Dele Alli as well. Now, there's an interesting thing in the paper this morning, whereas Levi is saying we wouldn't take 150 million for Dele Alli. So now he's setting the price there, in my opinion, right? But at the same time, he's put a wage cap on his wages.
Yeah.
Right? Now, he's performing a miracle in doing it, but you'd have to say, if I was Dele Alli's family, what's going on here? He values you at 150 million. So what's Kane worth? Kane must be worth 200 million, right? He's on at max 100 grand a week.
Yeah.
Now, this is big money, but it's not big money in relation to what the players are worth and what the other players in other clubs are paying.
There were reports last week that when Danny Rose went back into training, went back into the dressing room, he received a standing ovation from the Spurs players.
Yeah, I think they're going to find it difficult to maintain this 100 grand thing. Players are players and the players have agents. Danny Rose, I'd say, was only saying what a lot of the players think because they see the money that's going around. And you see Spurs at the moment, they're talking to the Chelsea lad, what's his name? Barkley. And they've got a cap of 100 grand. Apparently, Barkley's been offered 125 grand at Everton. So there's not many players are going to say, well, I'll go to Spurs because they're good for me. You know, because the money talks. I mean, Arsenal tried it for 10 years. It didn't work. So I can't see. I think it's going to be very difficult in the long term to keep a cap on those particular players.
You look at someone like Ross Barkley and, okay, he's still, 23 and he could still make a real name for himself at some club.
Yeah.
Do you understand completely that he might go to Chelsea above Spurs, knowing that he may play less at Chelsea, but they're going to pay him 25 grand a week more?
Or more. I mean, Everton have offered him 25 grand more. Chelsea might be offering him another 50%. Yeah. Now, I can't see inside Barkley's head, but what you notice in recent times, money talks. There's no doubt about that. And what have Spurs got to offer him? You know, he said, well, Pacino said, well, I could make him a better player than that. Well, pay him as well. You know, I mean, if Dele Alli's worth 150 million and he wouldn't take 150 million, why is he capped at 100 grand? And we've known over the years, money attracts players. I know players say, I want to play in the Champions League and I want to do that and the other. I haven't seen any of them yet say, well, I'll take less money to do that.
Yeah.
Just doesn't happen. Because they've got agents as well. And no, why should you be taking 50 grand less than just to play for Spurs?
Spurs did manage a win. Granted, Jonjo Shelvey was sent off. Do you expect, if they don't make many additions to the squad, that they can contend again this season?
Well, history has shown that it doesn't happen. Now, it can happen because they've a lot of good players. The young lad they brought in, was it Kyle Walker?
Kyle Walker Peters.
Excellent. Really excellent. I think he's better than Walker and Trippier, actually, as a young lad. So it depends what they have in that. Maybe, see, I'm sceptical about, like, we've got these great players in the academy, right? But if he's an example of what they got, they could do it. Now, I still suspect that they won't, because you don't have that many good players. But this kid coming in was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. He can go and be a top-class player. Maybe they have one or two others that they don't have to go into the transfer market. But with Spurs in the past history, I think, you know, finances come into it all the time, you know? And there's no doubt that Pochettino, see, they contradict each other at Spurs. Lever saying, the manager's happy with what we're doing, we're going to the academy. And next thing you read, Pochettino saying, we're still on the lookout for players.
Yeah.
You know? And Levi saying, this is not sustainable, all the various things he said. At the same time, he takes 50 million for Kyle Walker, but he doesn't put it back into the to buy players.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a money situation. And it is difficult to get a new stadium. But it didn't happen. Arsenal couldn't do it over a period of time. And I think I'd be amazed if Spurs continue with their cap on the wages, that the bigger clubs like Barcelona and Real Madrid, especially for Kane, that they're coming in. And if there's a thing on his transfer, an escape clause, you get Barcelona and we'll pay that.
Yeah. And I guess in all of this, we don't really know what Maurizio Pochettino's thinking. You were talking earlier about Chelsea, how quickly you can lose the morale. Yeah. If he's looking around his dressing room and suddenly the players are getting upset because of outside influences, because of money.
Yeah, but he can't do anything about it. He's not in charge of it. You know, like he used to do as he's told, like most managers have to do. I mean, they all give the impression, well, I'm in charge of the whole situation. But, you know, say, for example, in the Spurs case, they do get an offer next year for 150 million for Kane, right? Now, Kane, I think his father's his agent. But if he does get an agent, right, and he knows he can get 200 grand a week, double his wages, going to Barcelona, how can he say, well, I don't want to go. I want to stay with Spurs because I love them. You know, like money, unfortunately, money corrupts. And I don't blame the players, don't get me wrong. If they can get it, they can get it, because it's a short life. I mean, I could understand that if Levi was saying to Harry Kane and Dele Alli, look, you stick with us in those wages. And in 10 years' time, when we've got the stadium paid for and all that, we'll give you X amount for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
For 10 years to make up for what we're not giving you now. Right. Now that's a dream. That ain't going to happen.
We build a statue for you outside the stadium.
There's Jimmy, I go back in a while. Jimmy Greaves was a genius for Spurs. Right?
Yeah.
Jimmy had some fierce stroke. Right. And yeah. Like, who at Spurs cares about Jimmy Greaves?
Mm.
No, that's the way of the world. Now, luckily enough, the players now are earning a lot of money. I'm talking about only 100 grand a week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's whatever. It's just 5 million a year, which is big money. But you have to take it in relation to Neymar's gone to Paris Saint-Germain. Now, Harry Kane could, at the end of the season, prove to be as good a player as Neymar.
Mm.
Right? And he's getting a quarter of what Neymar's getting.
Yeah.
It's not right either, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to blame.
But anyway, that's Spurs, and if Levi can do it, well, then he's going to be one of the geniuses of football.
We don't have a lot of time, but just want to touch on Liverpool. How has Jurgen Klopp managed to go through the entire summer without seeming to make any inroads on Liverpool's defence, how they defend in open play and in set pieces? Yeah.
Well, I don't know is the answer, Nathan, but I think what he has done with bringing what's the left back's name?
Moreno
back into the team, right? Having dropped him out, and Milner being one of the best players, he's actually made the defence worse, not better. He's made it worse, as you say. He hasn't bought anybody in. He's got Moreno still in the team, going back like 2 years where he was a disaster, and he was a disaster again the other night. You know,
what could his thinking be? Was there anything from an attacking sense that Moreno does better than Milner?
I don't think so. No, I mean, he's a defender. He's supposed to be the only defender. And his defending is the main thing. I mean, you asked me the question, I couldn't tell you because you can't make any sense of it. I mean, Moreno has proven when he was in the team to be an absolute failure. They couldn't wait to get him in the team. And now you'd say it was when it was the season before last. Has he been training? Has he been getting better? Has he been doing this? Has he been doing that? And when you see him on the pitch in the years, you say, well, that's fair enough. He's improved. And he's worse. Or is he as bad as he was? The two matches he's played in that I've seen him playing in, he's as bad now, if not worse, than he was 2 years ago. So where's the logic? There's no logic in that. You ask me why, I don't know.
Would it make you worry for Liverpool longer term that there is some sort of fatal flaw in Klopp that he just cannot identify or fix defensive problems?
Well, that would be and again, in football, you can only go on what you see.
Mm.
And he's been there, 18 months now or so? He certainly hasn't improved the defence. And in fact, they're worse than they were. So there has to be a flaw there. He either sees it and doesn't know what to do about it, or he doesn't see it at all. One's as bad as the other.
Mm.
So it's not good for the future of Liverpool. I mean, even the other night, they won. It was a good win away from home. But the other team created some chances, missed a penalty, as we know. They weren't needed. The teams were good at the back. I mean, in Hoffenheim, were terrible at the back as well. But Liverpool didn't look secure.
Yeah, they're exciting to watch, if nothing else.
Well, they can be. I mean, actually, the pressing game that he had last year... he's not quite doing that this year. And that was their main... I mean, I described him last year as a one-trick pony with a good trick, a very good trick. And that was pressing. And actually, I haven't seen that this year so far, anyway.
Yeah. All right, John. Great stuff as always. Thanks for joining
us
in the studio.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.